6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Thursday, May 26, 2022. Boy, was that last half hour something else. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Thank you so much for joining us. We're trying to get to the meat of the matter, the truth. Everybody likes red meat. That's just the way it is. Red meat, I'm talking about, that's a legal term that a lot of attorneys use. It means red meat means the guts of things. It means we want to get to the truth. We want to get to the real facts. We don't want to be led around like a hog with a nose ring. We don't want that. We want people to stand up, take a stand. And I mean, after listening to what Dr. Truat was telling us about the idea of the banking industry shutting down and converting to digital currency before November, that's kind of scary. And so, you know, to follow that up, obviously, there is a lot of this two-party thing going on, a lot of infighting and a lot of division. And there is one candidate that obviously that's out there campaigning. The June 28th primaries coming up in the state of Oklahoma. We have Dr. Mark Sherwood with us on the Power Hour. And he and I both spoke at Myrtle Beach, come to find out. He was on first thing in the morning. I was on later in the morning just before lunch. And Dr. Mark Sherwood, welcome to the show. You're running for governor of the state of Oklahoma.
Yes, sir, Dave, indeed. Thank you for having me, man. I'm super honored to be here with you.
Well, God bless you. The website is Sherwood2022.com for those of you that want to make a donation. And the thing is your big take here, and this is the thing, I always wonder why, because abortion is not a constitutional item. It's not there anywhere, but you're saying states should abolish it anyway. Because, you know, it's not there and we're basically all part of God's creatures. And why do we look the other way? Why should we go the other way when we're part of God's community, his creatures? Why should we do that?
Well, obviously you're right. You know, when we look at the Bible, Jeremiah 1:5, I knew you before you were created in the womb. And the interesting thing about abortion with the Roe v. Wade opinion back in 73, Dave, it was an erroneous, mistaken opinion, a misinterpretation of the 9th and 14th Amendments. Therefore, they issued this opinion, and it sort of gave permission. It wasn't ever a law. It was just an opinion. But it sort of gave permission for these states that were once pretty much all having abortion, which is murder, being codified as such in their state statute. So a person would do it, and it could be murder. They'd be charged the same. Well, when that opinion came down, things flipped, and people started getting permission to do it. And, of course, that's progressed to where now there are many, many states and many, many sort of leftist agenda discussions about allowing it to be, you know, full-term abortions and even post-birth abortions or murders, you know, a weekend or so. And so it's sad the trajectory that came. And I do feel personally, you know, based on my own life experiences, that we need to stop it. It's always been a state issue, and we don't need to wait on Roe v. Wade to do anything. It's still a state issue, and the states could have stopped it at any time or never started at any time on the flip side.
Well, I know this, and see, here's the other thing, too, is now they're talking about we have this abortion ban that Oklahoma Republican Governor Kevin Stitt enabled the nation's strictest abortion laws, honoring an election promise to end availability of the procedure. He's on the right track, correct?
Well, a lot of these bills, in Oklahoma we have about 200 of these things. We still have abortions. We had almost 6,000 last year in the state of Oklahoma.
Wow.
At least on record. Now, it's funny that the most recent bill, which was a House bill that was signed and put in effect, it went out there on the media as a strictest abortion ban. But if you get right into it, what it is it gives citizens, and I was reading this morning in preparation for our time, citizens the right to sue, and this is very important, to sue a person that does an abortion or aids and abets an abortion, or helps in an abortion, okay? So it gives a citizen the right. So you and I, Dave, could sue someone. We could sue, you know, Dr. Death, you know, being funny with that or not, but we could sue him for doing an abortion on Jane Doe, okay? But the law prohibits us from suing Jane Doe. I hope you heard that correctly. The law prohibits us from suing Jane Doe, but allows us to sue Dr. Death. And it's up to us me and you, then, to come up with the money to sue Dr. Death. And if we are found, if the jury civilly finds that we have been damaged, then Dr. Death will have to pay us $10,000. There's no jail time involved, $10,000. So in looking at this, you can see, well, okay, that might stop some, perhaps, from Dr. Death doing it, but it's not going to stop Jane Doe from doing it. And that's the fallacy of a lot of these headlines, that they're almost like a clickbait kind of thing to do some kind of agenda prior to these midterm elections. And if we're going to stop it, you don't need 200 laws. You need one. And so, you know, there's a lot of laws like that that are just kind of not what we believe they are until we read it.
Well, and the thing is, Dr. Mark Sherwood, the reason the Supreme Court, and this is the thing, now they're saying Chief Roberts is the one that leaked it, Judge Alito's opinion, we're looking at this going, okay, you know, in all sense of the word, we have states' rights, and this technically, by coming out the way it did, gave the rights back to the states as far as overturning Roe v. Wade, and now we got people out there, well, we're going to march on the Supreme Court, and we're going to murder the justices for this if they overturn Roe v. Wade. And I really think that what the justices did, even with Alito's opinion, is gave the power back to where it belongs, the states. You would concur that's the right move.
Yes, the states, via the 10th Amendment, and this is super important for our listeners to catch, and this is a 10th Amendment paraphrase, the states and the people respectively maintain the power over the federal government. And the federal government was created by the states. So it's not really the United States. It's these United States. So they're almost like the individual little sovereign states or sovereign countries. They all have their capitals. They all have their governor, which is the equivalent of their maybe a president of that particular sovereign state. And then they got the dual cabinets like they did in Washington. So Washington got too big. And so this has always been a state issue. Let's go back even 2 years ago. If this wasn't a discussion, a state could have, should have stopped abortion. They could do that. Now, will they get sued and all this stuff? Yes. They're going to get sued anyway, because that's the world we live in, right? We are a litigant-heavy U.S., right? And that's what we do. But right is right, wrong is wrong. Why do the lives that are conceived, why are we punishing them for being conceived? That makes no sense to me. My life began in 1964. I'm adopted. I thank the Lord for my birth mother giving me an opportunity. I met her.
We share that commonality.
Yeah, I got to meet my mom before she died, and it was a really cool deal. You know, she's gone on to be the Lord now, and I got to know her for a couple of years, and it was interesting. You know, she was able to, she held up under my baby blanket and gave it to me, you know, kind of a touching time, and it filled a peace in both of our hearts. But I asked her the story. What happened? You know, tell me the story. Who's my dad? What happened? You know, and she goes to a party of some sort, and she either, you know, alcohol or whatever, but anyway, ends up passing out and doesn't remember any encounter, Dave, any encounter. And she is barely 16 years of age, and turns out, long story very short, my biological father is a 19 or 20-year-old man who's home on leave from the military, from the conflict. And she finds out she's pregnant from this man through a series of conversations. And eventually, you know, we all know that that would be something that might be classified as okay to go ahead and abort me, right? It would be today in our world. And by the way, the bill that just you asked about earlier, it does allow abortions in instances of rape and incest, which are reported to police. Okay, so it didn't stop it. And so my mom and these families had this discussion, and they decided, and abortion was discussed, according to her, they decided to give me a chance through adoption. And I'm really grateful. And I look at it like this, man, I'm talking to you right now. I do not feel at all that I'm a mistake. And Dave, you're adopted. I don't feel you're a mistake. We were on purpose. God knew that we'd be having this conversation right now at this point in history. He knew the people who were going to listen. He knows the people that are hearing this conversation right now and feeling super encouraged and blessed because God has a purpose for their life as well.
Correct. I agree totally. And I had a 4-year relationship with my mom before she passed away too. And I found her a lot based on just medical reasons. And I mean, it was a wonderful relationship too. And I found out the fact that my entire family is self-employed. And I'm just laying here, wonder why I couldn't work for anybody else. You know, so I mean, all of these little traits and stuff, all the things that you find out, it was so cool to know. And then when you finally get to do meet your birth parents, and I never met my birth father, but I did talk to him on the phone multiple times, and he was quite the jokester and the ladies' man. But anyway, you know, my understanding was that he was a little frisky, too, with the ladies. And so I have half-brothers and half-sisters across the country that I have no idea who they are, what they're doing, but I understand they're all professional. So at least, you know, we all have a long history, and we just pray to God and thank God that our mothers way back when made the right decision not to do the abortion process. Otherwise, we would not be having this conversation right now.
That's very true. And let us understand the lineage of Jesus even. There's prostitute there. You know, go figure. It's just the irony of it all and how that we've just abandon the value of life. And I would submit, Dave, that the lack of value of life has bled over into every part of our being right now, our existence, our culture. And, you know, we've had, you know, school shootings that are much in the news and much on my heart today. And it's just a tragedy right now of how the devaluing has occurred. But it's really rooted in the lack of acknowledgement of God. When you pull out the acknowledgement of God, you allow in the, just by inference, the acknowledgement of your enemy and give him authority.
And so when you spoke at the Clay Clark Reawaken America tour, which you do a lot of, just out of curiosity, this platform that you spoke of on stage carries over into your campaign, does it not?
It does. In our lives, my wife and I, I'm a naturopathic doctor, a traditional, and my wife is an osteopathic doctor by trades, respectively, and we have a staff, and our whole practice, which is really spanning across the globe, is to lead people down a pathway of true healing. And we have medicines and all this, but we talk about spiritual, physical, emotional interblending or interdependency and how, you know, we as human beings can walk healed and whole, and we cannot ignore the spiritual component of that. And even in the midst of all the evil that we're dealing with right now, you know, on the tour, you know, there's a lot of talk about what is happening with the New World Order, the Great Reset, the agenda, and that is all very true. However, what also is true is there's something called hope in God. And if we go back to that very core foundation, he values each life and he loves us so, and no life's a mistake. That foundation belief right there can carry us through the uncertainties, through the tough times, and through the pain.
All right. And so the rest of your platform, Dr. Mark, what else are you campaigning on besides what you discussed in the Clay Clark?
Yeah, so in Oklahoma, we're a little bit unique here. We're an Indian state. So there's 39 tribes here. A lot of the tribes were moved around. You know, we've all heard of the story of the Trail of Tears, but it landed in Oklahoma, and 39 tribes were settled here, and this was their land, their sovereign territory, and then eventually it was made into statehood, and now we have a state that has these intermingling of these sovereign nations and then a sovereign state. And so it's a very unique setup here, and it was meant to be a congruent relationship that was built on cooperation. And now we have a non-relationship between the Oklahoma government, the Oklahoma governor, and the tribe specifically, and It's terrible. It's tearing the state apart because of all Oklahoma. So that's something that I have worked on repairing diligently already. Secondly, in Oklahoma, we as a state have more land purchased per acreage than any other state in these United States, Dave, from the Chinese Communist Party and their associates under the guise of this illegal or this legalized medical marijuana. And it's to the tune of over 300,000 acres in Oklahoma. And it's being used as a hub of drug trafficking, weapons trafficking, and sex trafficking. And there's a loophole in the law here that you have to be only a 75%, you know, sort of citizenship owner. So it's opened up a door for the Chinese Communist Party to infiltrate our country right here in my state. And that's got to end yesterday. And in Oklahoma, we have a poor health outcome. We're like 48th in the country in health. We're 47th in education. Our economy is not growing and not viable. We have a ton of organizations in our state with no accountability. And even right now, our current leadership is, it seems like it's a scandal every other day. And I suspect it's not just Oklahoma. It's probably this big government everywhere. You know, the under the table deals, the back room handshake deals, and the brother-in-law deals, and politics, frankly, are ruining this country. And party system, I'm not a fan of it all. I get it, but I'm not a fan. And all this corruption we have gives people zero trust in the government, which maybe that's what had to happen. We have to give the power back to the people again, because the people really are the voice that needs to run this country.
But the thing is the people who are running this country right now are not the people in the White House. There's deeper forces that are running this country, obviously. We just had Dr. True Autumn that was talking about the shifting in currency, and I don't see, even if the federal government tries to pull a thing like this and go to social credit system, I really have a hard time believing the states are going to go for this. What's your take?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the states are buying into this, because a lot of states have signed off on the Health Smart Card already, which is going to give you the ability to download or upload, however you want to look at it, your medical records. And of course, that is going to be soon followed by your financial records, which will soon be identified by this social credit score, which will soon be able to be controlled by people that judge you based upon what you do or don't do, you participate in or don't participate in. So we are heading on that pathway. A lot of the states on the West and East Coast have done that. Even Oklahoma here has already okayed the Health Smart Card. So it's coming rapidly these days. And you would think that the people would wake up. But here's the problem. The majority of leaderships, even in these United States, they parallel in structure to the mindset of those that are in charge of this country. It's a globalist agenda. It's an agenda of control. It's an agenda that wants to tell you what to do because they're elite and you're not. It's like the monarchy and the peasants. And instead of we the people, they want you to be we the peasants. They want to put you one step below or right above death and get you so dependent upon the government for your food, your money, your protection, your health, and your, you know, your border security. And the government, federal government, was never intended to feed you and clothe you. That was our job, self-government. So I do see it going that way, unfortunately. And my hope is that, you know, we'll have some states push back. I believe that Governor DeSantis in the state of Florida has done a pretty good job, and I honor him for that. And I think we can do more. I really do. And I think we need to find the governors, find the sheriffs that are willing to step up for the right things and really protect the states. And when we do that, the bully called the federal government and those that are kind of blindly controlling this thing, not so much blindly anymore, they're going to back down. Because when you step up to a bully, the bully generally shies away.
Yeah, usually that's true. Of course, when they come at you with the full force, power and force of the United States military, or let somebody else do this, I mean, they're wanting to give over all of our health rights to the World Health Organization. What's your take on that? That's something you would fight, right?
You bet. I put a statement out last week on that one, Dave, and it was strong. Basically, in a nutshell, and this is super important, back to our 10th Amendment discussion, if the states and the people retain the power unless they give it up, that means the federal government does not have the ability or authority to give over something that they have not received. In other words, we the states have not given up our authority, our sovereignty to the federal government. Therefore, the whole idea of this clown-in-chief administration thinking they can give up that sovereignty to the WHO is not even legal. It's not constitutional. And frankly, I think it's treasonous. And so because of that, that holds no authority over these United States. And so my statement and position on that would be if they tried to come into Oklahoma, for example, they are not welcome. And we will fight back with every bit of legal force we can within our power to push back against tyranny. We have no option at that point. And I do believe that there's a lot of people, states, waking up from the grassroots, you know, from broadcasts like yours, from this movement. But we're still fighting a battle of this elitist mentality that's not understanding we the people. And frankly, they're not part of we the people anymore. And that is a huge deal. But I think, as I told people in the statement the other day, that, you know, if the WHO tries to come in Oklahoma, I do not believe, as I sit here right now in my office, I do not believe the entire U.S. military is going to acquiesce to this. I think you'll have a division in the military. I think there will be military people that will not enforce that because they know in their heart it's right. There's too many good, God-fearing, Constitution-understanding patriots within our country that are all going to back down. You may have some that try, but they will not win. We will win this battle. And if the WHO tries to come in our state, I say this to them, who do you think you are?
Thank you for that. Dr. Mark Sherwood, thank you so much for your time. Good luck with the campaign and good luck with the election this month. Thank you and God bless you.
I appreciate
for what you. Thank you, sir.
God bless you. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And I'm just hoping we can continue to have this conversation. And I'm talking about the conversation you have because some social credit score is not prohibiting you from doing it. Batya Ungar-Sargon is going to be with us after the bottom of the hour break. Stay with us.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Thursday, May 26, 2022. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Thank you so much for joining us this segment. Boy, I mean, it just keeps getting better and better. Everybody else, all of our listeners, we have some very smart listeners listening to the show, and you're going to really appreciate this because we actually have the deputy opinion editor at Newsweek, Batya Unger-Sargon, who has a new book out called Bad News: How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. Now, the only thing that I have to take issue with the title is I thought we lived in a republic. But apparently everybody seems to think we're living in a democracy. And as long as people keep using the words democracy and vaccine, I guess, you know, we have a really hard time turning things around. But the one thing that Batya Unger-Sargon, who is on the show with us here on the phone, she and I have in common is that Americans indeed have lost their faith in the news media. Batya, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It is such a privilege and a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, we appreciate you, too, and the time you're taking to spend with us. Now, how woke is the media?
Very woke.
Take off with that.
Look, let me first start by saying what I mean by woke. You know, I don't mean that the media is focused on the very important issues of, you know, police reform, you know, the lack of equal access to a good education, intergenerational poverty, and, you know, 20 to 30% of Americans descended from slave communities. I'm not talking about that. That stuff's all really important to me. When I say woke, what I'm talking about is what sociologists found in a 2018 Yale study that found that there was a difference between how white liberals and white conservatives talk to people of color. And they found that when white liberals talk to blacks and Latinos, they dumb down their vocabulary. And white conservatives don't do that. That impulse to, you know, dumb down your vocabulary because of the color of somebody's skin, that's wokeness. It comes from a view that white people have, you know, endless amounts of privilege and power and agency, and people of color do not have any of those things, and they must be defended and protected by the good white liberals. And you see this view, this sort of binary based on power, you know, based on race. It's really taken hold of the liberal media at a very, very deep level. So it obsesses over race and gender and white supremacy and all of these issues while really ignoring the actual very real material needs of the black community and the working class of all races. So in my book, I argue that the history of American journalism is really, you know, there was a status revolution among American journalists. American journalists used to be working class. Today they're part of the elites. And as they sort of made that journey from working class to elite, they abandoned the working class of all races to wage a culture war around race and identity that actually benefits them economically. That's the argument.
Yeah, so, I mean, to think, and I've seen the CFR stats, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, I mean, they're infiltrating and have infiltrated most of the mainstream media. I mean, we're talking print, social media, radio, all of mainstream television, all the networks, and then, of course, some of Hollywood. You know, they've all been invaded by Council on Foreign Relations and their world, I'd call world-class policy. That's kind of an oxymoron. The bigger problem I have with this is you're right about this. I mean, when you're sitting there calling people like Larry Elder a racist, and I've supported his campaign. I love the way the guy thinks, and he's funny. You know, when you get to things like that, and you were talking, Batya, about this issue with like Walter Cronkite? I mean, are we talking about that far back when journalism was honest?
You know, for so much of American history, journalism was this working class trade where journalists lived in working class neighborhoods and they saw themselves as answerable to the little guy. They saw themselves that they wouldn't have dreamed, they couldn't show their faces in church or in the local supermarket if they weren't out there representing their neighbors, the lineman or the factory worker, you know? Like they would go to people in power and demand justice on behalf of the little guy. Today they are the person in power. They go to school with politicians and other very rich elites, you know, tech giants, whatever. All of these people went to school with the journalists who cover them. And so the media now, journalism is produced by the elites and for the elites because digital journalism is very much about getting targeted audiences. And of course the liberal media wants that elite targeted audience. So I think, you know, the point I make in the book about Walter Cronkite is this thing that united that we like to think of Walter Cronkite as, you know, this golden age era because he was able to speak to the left and the right. You know, he had people who are Democrats and Republicans in his viewers. But the truth of the matter is he had rich and working class Americans as his viewers. The thing he united Americans across was class lines. As much as along political lines, and I think that the real divide today in America is not about politics, it's about class, which you can see, you know, the example of another journalist, Tucker Carlson, is the most watched show, not just by Republicans, but by Democrats, you know, because when you're working class, you're looking for
next.
That.
They want to see what he'll say next. It's just like Howard Stern, when he talks, it's like he's just the opposite of Tucker. We watch Tucker a lot. But some of the things that I think Tucker is limited as to what he really wants to say. I really believe the producers have a clamp on him. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that he's running the show there. I think he has a real line into what the working class is looking for and wants to hear. I mean, all he talks about is the class divide and how the ruling elites are screwing us all over, which is 100% true.
Well, I mean, see, that's the thing about journalists, and I am one, and my whole duty from way back when I started news reporting back in the 1970s, when I started working news, my whole thing was you got to tell the truth, get to the bottom of it, and report the facts. You know, back when we used to use a saying, if it bleeds, it leads. And so, I mean, this was the thing. Everybody wanted blood and guts. I tried to get away from that. And I said, look, I think as a news director of a major market radio station, my focus was on the economy, because that's what mattered to people, not who died
totally.
In last night's wreck. You know, it was we got to focus on the economy and what matters to people. And, you know, the good stories about how people go out and do nice things for other people and how they're neighborly and how communities are important and focus on the community. I mean, to me, that was the duty that was basically placed upon me as a burden, actually, that I had to live up to.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that you really don't see that kind of reporting anymore. If you look at the New York Times, you know, you look at the Washington Post, like these people don't want to report on the class divide because, you know, by and large, journalists have benefited from it. You know, they, over the last 30 years, 40 years, you know, journalists have become, you know, part of the elites. And so they don't report on the economy anymore because they don't experience the economy the way that working class Americans do. Instead, they'd much rather talk about culture war issues like race and gender because they can use those as a cudgel against their political enemies without actually offering anything to the people on their side who are hurting.
Well, you got some really good talking points, Batya. I'll tell you that. I can tell that you really put a lot of time and energy into the book. The name of the book is Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. And again, I get to that term, democracy, and that's, you know, basically representation of the people. You know, we have a republic. We don't say into the democracy for which it stands. We talk about a republic. See, even this has been watered down. People are reacting, obviously. If they're watching Tucker, they're not watching The View. They're not watching CNN. They're not watching MSDNC. You know, they're watching Tucker. And so the thing is they're
MSDNC. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, see that's Hannity's term, you know, for MSD. We call it MSDNC, but you know, the thing is we're looking at all of the blowback, and here we are being as much of the truth network as we have. And I mean, we have a lot of cynical listeners out there that have said, yeah, I've heard this stuff before. You people, we know what fake news is. I've had people on analyzing the meaning of propaganda and what it is. We've had people come forward on Q and various other things saying, hey, this is Operation Mockingbird. Notice when there's a crisis, they use the mainstream media to manipulate us all during COVID. I really think this was all by design. Do you get into that in the book?
You know, I wrote the book during the lockdown, and so I didn't really have time to reflect on the ways in which it really sort of changed things and amplified things, but it's 100% an example of what I talk about in the book. If you think about COVID, you think about the divide in COVID. It looks like a political divide, right? It looks like it was right against left. Like the right said, no, we need to keep the economy open, keep the economy going, and the left said, no, we need to lock down. But at the end of the day, that divide was about class. The left was on the side of the laptop class, you know, the email class, the pajama class, right? People whose jobs were easily translated into work from home situations where they could work all day in their pajamas and not leave their homes while relying on the labor of workers who had to go out and brave the plague, you know, putting themselves and their family in danger. And while these people sat safely at home, demanding that they get to keep staying home, demanding that the lockdowns go on. And so basically what they said was, you know, we're sitting at home, by the way, in houses that suddenly their housing prices, just the value of their houses skyrocketed, right? So they're literally making money hand over fist and sitting there and demanding that the gap between the, you know, the property owning laptop class elites and the working class, you know, Amazon delivery truck drivers and grocery store workers, that gap get wider and wider, and that the lockdown go on, and that the small businesses absolutely just evaporate, right? The pandemic was the largest transfer of wealth from the middle and working class to the elites in American history. That's not a story about politics. That's a story about class. But one side of the political aisle is definitely associated with the wrong class in this case.
Well, and the media really should have maintained impartiality, but that just totally went the opposite direction, and it became more obvious when the goalposts moved constantly with Fauci and everybody else. People started to realize, hey, wait a minute. My kid is wearing a mask to school every day. Well, if you don't wear a mask, you're un-American. Yeah, I mean, see, the media actually contributed to the divisiveness of what happened in the last 2 years, did they not?
100%. They took something that was, you know, a gift from God, their economic privilege, right? God decides whether or not you're going to be economically secure. They took that gift and they translated it and they misunderstood it as a signal of their own virtue, right? We are the virtuous ones who stay home and slow the spread and wear three masks. You are the dirty fallen ones who refuse vaccine mandates. You know, you are the lepers, right? They misunderstood their economic privilege as virtue. And you see that again and again in everything that the media pushes, everything that the DNC pushes, everything progressives stand for, whether it's the Green New Deal or open borders or defunding the police. These are all things where the leftist elites have enormous economic privilege. These policies benefit them economically, and they are a tax on the working class that is making them downwardly mobile and causing, you know, 100% causing the mass mental illness that we're seeing, the mass and the downward mobility, the deaths of despair. All of this is related.
Well, do you ever see it changing? I mean, unless it's by force. This is the thing. We're hearing reports now about China planning a D-Day invasion of the west coast of the United States. I mean, what do you make of all of this stuff? I mean, there's fear-mongering going on from both sides. I like the way that Tucker is basically, you know, open and honest and laughs at things that need to be laughed at. You know, and that's the thing that the rest of them, like on The View, I don't know how these, when you have, you know, people that name Joy and they're anything but, you know, on a program like that, and people buy into this stuff. And then Bill Maher came out against trans. I don't know if you saw that on the show, but the video is circulating all over the place now. You know, now the media is starting to implode it itself. You see that happening?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think what we're really seeing right now is a sort of mass boycott of, like, the national news media, especially the liberal national news media, by the American people. You know, if you look at CNN's numbers, I mean, they're really, really struggling. Fox is actually, I think, picking off a lot of their vote, a lot of their viewers. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing is just the American people are sick of being asked to hate their fellow Americans so that some tech company or some journalist or some politician can get rich. You know, they're just sick of it. And so they're withdrawing. They're voting with their dollars, and they're just refusing to consume this stuff anymore. And I'll be honest with you. I think that's a good thing. I mean, I know I'm in the news media, but I think that's great. I don't think there's anything you can learn from the news, from some national publication or television station, that you can't learn from the local bodega or from going to church and talking to your friends and being part of your community. And so I think we've replaced, you know, spirituality and community with information and knowledge. And it's, the American people are turning against that right now and demanding better. And I think that's great.
Well, so they're boycotting the sponsors is what they're doing, which is I've encouraged. I mean, ever since I heard about State Farm giving trans related or gender queer related books to schools. And it's like, everybody just go out and cancel your State Farm policies. And now they've all of a sudden changed their tune and said, we're not going to do this anymore. You know, the sad thing about it is when you look at stuff like this and the media got a hold of it, very few channels actually exposed what they were doing. And see, this is another fault of the left-wing media, is it not? That they don't want to tell the truth. They want to spin it.
Well, I think everybody's sort of spinning it, but it's spinning it on whose behalf, right? Like, who is the beneficiary of your spin? And I think in the case of, like, liberal mainstream corporate media, it's very clear that, like, the beneficiaries of that spin are the kind of coastal liberal elites who, you know, are in the top 10% and have their own economic agenda that's bolstered by a lot of these. It's very clear that the Democratic Party is increasingly speaking to the college-educated, whereas they used to represent labor and be on the side of the working class.
I think the college educated are going to be in for a rude awakening in the near to immediate future, Batya. Tom in Michigan, you're on the phone with Batya Unger Sargon. What say you?
I'm thinking the problem is the repeal of the Smith-Mundine Act of 1948. That was where the government it was known as the U.S. Information and Education Act, authorized the State Department to engage in propagandizing foreign countries as a form of public diplomacy. Well, they modernized it in the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, which basically said, okay, it's all right for the government to propagandize the people of the United States of America, where before it was illegal. If, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, that was Obama that signed that, and I'm thinking that was, so now we see where the citizen journalist starts to come online in 2012, 2013, there's some competition to the major media where, you know, people would turn on their television set and, hey, that's gossip or whatever they say. And, you know, everything changed with the citizen journalist. They couldn't control. But I'm wondering why I don't hear politicians on a federal level talking about, you know, getting the Smith-Mundine Act back in force so as, you know, not to be legal to propagandize the American people.
All right, Tom, appreciate that question. Batya, what do you say to that?
So I have to do more research into that. It's a very interesting question, and I'm not familiar enough to say anything intelligent, so I really appreciate Tom's comment. About the citizen journalist, I think he's completely correct that social media really changed the game. And it's had a kind of, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you have really positive things, like, for example, George Floyd's murder being, you know, being filmed, and then now there's been justice, and his killer is in jail, right? I don't think that would have happened in a pre-social media era. But on the other hand, it also has a negative impact, which is that, you know, people will see something like the horrific killing of George Floyd, and then they'll assume that that is somehow part of a pattern. You know, which it isn't. It just, the data does not bear that out. And so, you know, it does have this double-edged sword. On the one hand, it brings really important things to light, but then also oftentimes it can distort the truth about really important issues as well.
Well, we're being joined here. We're on the phone with Deputy Opinion Editor at Newsweek, Batya Unger Sargon. We appreciate your calls, too, 844-769-2944. Alan in Texas. Now, Alan is a He's a talk show host, also in his own right, Batya, so you're kind of getting dual coverage here. Alan, how are you doing, sir?
Great.
Yeah, no, basically, folks, what we're talking about is, like, basically mind control here. It's on a global scale at this point with the digital age that we're in. Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with the work called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Explains, you know, economic shock testing. They do social shock testing, like this latest State Farm thing. I see that as a shock test to see what reactions would be. They probe, they test, but most of this stuff, you know, there is some organic things that happen, but most of this stuff, especially if it makes the media news cycles, it's all planned and it's gamed out, you know, in the back rooms, in the think tanks. And the CFR, you know, Howard Cosell was a member in good standing of the CFR for, if not all of his career, most of it, as far as I understand. And the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, is an offshoot of the Royal Institute of International Affairs over in England, much like the Tavistock Institute was an offshoot of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. It is these mind control organizations that are going out, and they know people, they know how to pull our strings, and they do this, and every time they do it, they get a little better idea, and the noose tightens a little bit, or the boot gets closer to stomping on our face, as it would say in 1984.
Amazing. Baccio, what do you think about that comment?
So I think, I don't know that I have such a conspiratorial view as Alan does. It is certainly true that there's something called A-B testing of things like headlines and topics and keywords at the news organization level. So, for example, you know, at these bigger places, at a place like BuzzFeed, they'll publish an article and they'll publish 15 versions of it with 15 different headlines, and then whichever one performs the best on social media, that's the one they'll pick. So I think at a very granular level, and Alan's description is accurate, there is some kind of mind control going on there just between, like, the producers of the news and the consumers, where we are trying to hack their brains and get them to click on these articles. I think, to me, when I look at what's happened to the news media, the reason I don't think that there's mind control happening is because, like, I know these people, and the truth is, so let me tell you something interesting. My husband is from the Donbas region, and his dad is Russian. So he was talking to him about Ukraine the other day, and his father completely believes all of Putin's lies and all of the propaganda. And my husband was trying to argue with him about, you know, what we're seeing, how it's complicated, you know, the videos, that footage that we've seen. And his father said to him, you know why everybody in America is against Russia in the media? Because if any journalist told the truth, they would go to jail. And it was so interesting to me because he couldn't possibly imagine why else, you know, the uniformity of the coverage would be, except for that there was state power threatening journalists, because that's what happens in Russia, right? If you tell the story that Putin doesn't want to hear, you go to prison, right? So, but to me, like, it was unthinkable to him the truth of the matter is, which is, what is the truth? The reason that there is a uniformity of views in American media, let's put Russia aside, because there, you know, it's pretty clear what's going on there. But, you know, let's take, you know, these woke issues. Why are they all in agreement over these woke issues when they're so far from reality? I don't think it's mind control. It's just peer pressure. And knowing these people, I can tell you, they care so deeply about being popular. There is so much peer pressure, especially on Twitter, where you can get mobbed for weeks at a time. This has happened to me. You say something they don't like, and for weeks, hundreds and thousands of people are tweeting at you to kill yourself and what a terrible person you are and how stupid you are and, you know, you should be fired and tagging your bosses, fire this person, right? It's just peer pressure. I don't think that, you know, we have to go to the level of mind control, of government intervention. The peer pressure is so extreme and these people are so petty that it actually has this total uniformity effect that somebody from Russia or from China would look at that and say, clearly the government is threatening them with jail time because how could they possibly all agree on this thing?
That's, well, that's, you know, deep, there was a guy who it was, I believe he was the lead editor of, I can't remember which major news organization it was, but at his retirement dinner, he basically came out and spoke his mind. He said, basically, he said, you understand it, you out there know it, that if we actually spoke our mind and we attempted to tell the truth, we would be out of our job and we would be blacklisted. You out there sitting out there in the audience know that we're nothing but media whores, is basically what he ended up saying. You know, but this is on his retirement because he didn't have to worry about losing his job,
right,
or, you know, being accepted. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Good show.
Yeah, appreciate it, Alan. Thank you so much, Alan in Texas. All right. And so with a couple of minutes we have left, where do people get the book, Batya?
Okay, so the book came out on audiobook just this week, so it's brand new. You can get that at Audible or on Amazon. The book is available on Amazon. It's available at encounterbooks.com. And if you want to support a small business, there's a small black-owned business in Kansas City called Bliss Wine and Books, and they also sell it. So if you want to send some money their way, that would be great, too. And it's called Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. I'm very sorry it's not called Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Our Republic.
That's all right. Hey, you had a reason for saying what you said. So, you know, we're just going to encourage people to go get a copy of the book and read and enlighten themselves. You know, this is coming from a deputy opinion editor at Newsweek. So, you know, I mean, when you get mainstream media finally calling the kettle black, you know, like I said, George Floyd is a poster child, really. You know, this is a problem we have with America, and the media just fed this, and they fed the riots in 2020, and it's just a never-ending cycle, and somehow we just hope and pray to God that we can stop this nonsense. I think we're ready to get off that merry-go-round. Batya Unger Sargon, thanks so much for being with us. We're out of time. Dave Kriegler with you on the Power Hour. We will be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. Central Time. In the meantime, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.